is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, is in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, the most populous of the stans. Eurasia is undergoing turmoil because of Afghanistan, because of China, because of the questions of energy in Europe. However, democracy makes an appearance in Tashkent, significant because Tashkent was, for most of the 20th century, a client state of the Soviet Union, which no longer exists. And Tashkent and the whole of Uzbekistan, a large resource-rich country on the Silk Road, is now seeking to elect parliaments and presidents to go forward in the ambition of all of Eurasia. So I come to the news because Gregory attended the most recent presidential election within these last days. The headline from Al Jazeera, Doha: Uzbek president secures second term in landslide election victory. First draft: Uzbek president Shavkat Mirziyoyev has been reelected for a second five-year term, according to the preliminary results of a poll that Western observers criticized as uncompetitive despite recent political reforms. Gregory, a very good day to you in Tashkent. It's very good to speak. You've been in the Fergana Valley. You were in Tashkent before the pandemic, December of 2019 is my memory, observing the parliamentary elections. Now you're there observing the presidential elections, both in Tashkent, the early voting, and in the Fergana Valley. Let's go to the Fergana because that's extremely romantic. This is the breadbasket of Uzbekistan, if not all of Central Asia, comparable to the San Joaquin Valley in California. What did you do there? What did you observe? How was the election conducted? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, it was a delight to be back in the Fergana Valley because this area, which has been known to Alexander the Great and the like, it was about as far north as he got to the Fergana Valley. It's really what the ancient Persians would call paradise, the word meaning a garden of plenty, because the Fergana Valley is the source of incredible wealth of food production of incredible quality. It's all organic food. It is remarkable, and of course for its arts and crafts. But I was going around a whole lot of the rural polling stations, and we were looking at how the procedures were going and how they compared with the procedures at the polling stations around Tashkent, the capital, and the like. And what was evident, of course, was incredible consistency in not only the way the polling processes were conducted, but the incredible grassroots enthusiasm for this. It's almost, to Western eyes, naive in that these people expect democracy to deliver a certain process in which they can have great trust. And that's what's been delivered at the last two elections, the parliamentary elections and yesterday's presidential election. Quite remarkable. And our organization, the International Strategic Studies Association, issued a statement today praising the absolute transparency and honesty and rigor of the procedures to ensure that voter fraud could not occur. Now, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe was the one body which said, well, there should have been more competition in the election. Frankly, that's not really the fault of the election process. There were five candidates, and they started to gain some little momentum. But what I think the Western observers failed to understand was that President Mirziyoyev, who took over in 2016, has done such an incredible job that not even the opposition candidates could lay a glove on him, because he was doing what they would, I would imagine, hoped to do in terms of reforming and modernizing Uzbek society, its legal structures, its competitiveness. He restored private property, for example, which made the country incredibly attractive once again to outside investors. He has literally lifted every sector of society. And I've been around Uzbekistan over the recent years and seen how even the remotest villages are getting the benefit of this transformation of governance. So it was no surprise when he got 80.1% of the vote. Nobody expected any less, because no matter where you go, he's immensely popular. As I say, even with people who are backing alternate candidates, they still think that Mirziyoyev has just been a miracle worker. And he's also made sure that there is top-to-bottom communication between the voters and the elected officials. He's got, in every region, he's got what it's called the President's House, where people can go literally to speak to the president in his house. And if he's there personally, he sees them. And if he's not there, then one of his representatives, who actually calls him up on the phone and says, "Well, I've got so-and-so here who's got this kind of problem." But the objective is, if you have a problem, you can go to the head of state and you can expect immediate work to begin on resolving your problem. This is unique. And it harkens back, if you like, to the old Muslim, Central Asian Muslim Majlis approach, where you could go and lay your grievances. But this is typical of the approach which he's taken, which is in many respects unique.
Gregory, the Al Jazeera report goes on to say Mirziyoyev's win will allow him to deepen his reform campaign and likely lead to Uzbekistan opening up further to foreign trade and investment. Something I observed when I visited in 2019 was an urge for market-based economy to launch what have been state-run enterprises, like in the Fergana Valley, very large agricultural enterprises, onto the market and let international investment, in fact, come into the country. In fact, I was there with a lot of bankers from Europe. This is before the pandemic, and I can believe they're coming back. But we must speak of security, because that was not present in 2019, the security worries. Afghanistan has collapsed in a darkness visible. The BBC and the UN and all major sources are now reporting a famine in Afghanistan, striking especially about half the country, 22 million people, but aimed at the youngest of the Afghanistan citizens, under 5 years old, 3 million of them. Mm-hmm. Now, what that means for the whole region is migration. Is Uzbekistan preparing for the migrants to cross into Uzbekistan seeking food security?
This was one of the topics I addressed both at the just recently to the leaders of the Institute for Strategic and Regional Studies under the President of Uzbekistan and the faculty of the Armed Forces Academy here in Tashkent. Basically, I made the point that regardless of natural conditions, cyclical drought conditions and the like in Afghanistan, the fact that the international donor base has evaporated from Afghanistan meant that that the Taliban government, even at its best, could not provide all that is necessary for Afghan society. So the fact that you've got a drought coupled with inexperienced governance, coupled with all of the other problems of corruption and the like within Afghanistan, it's absolutely no surprise that this turmoil has started to hit Afghan society. Yes, they are expecting a great influx of refugees going north into Uzbekistan, Tajikistan and the like, but also over into Pakistan. Now, this is the fact that they would be going into Pakistan is also of interest to the Central Asian states, because if you have the anticipated instability in Pakistan caused by this refugee flow, then I think this will be the signal for India to launch its long-awaited new war with Pakistan up in the north, where the Indian forces will probably cut across Pakistani-controlled Kashmir into the Wakhan corridor of Afghanistan. And this will really put the cat among the pigeons, and it will also cut off China from its land bridge down through Pakistan to the Indian Ocean. So there are many areas of concern for the Central Asian states. And it's interesting to note that had President Mirziyoyev not come into office in 2016 and started his reforms, had he not done that, The whole Central Asian structure, but particularly Uzbekistan, would not have been able to withstand this problem. So we have to be incredibly thankful that we've got Uzbekistan where it is today, a very cohesive, prosperous, and moreover, self-confident and optimistic society, ready to handle this challenge of the humanitarian crisis on its borders.
Is there any concern that the Taliban will push bad actors into Uzbekistan to recruit? You can recall before when the Taliban rose in the 20th century, there was great concern. This is before Mirziyoyev. This goes back to the post-Soviet era, that Tashkent could be a source of disruption, attacks, explosions. Are they worried about that?
They're worried about it, yes, because it doesn't have to be a concerted or deliberate Taliban program, which I don't think would happen because the Taliban is anxious to have good relations with Tashkent. But the radicalization of elements within Afghan society will almost certainly once again attempt to attract like creatures in Uzbekistan. Now, it's because of the prosperity of Uzbekistan that's going to be harder for them to find, but they will build up a base of jihadist feeling in Uzbekistan, and that will probably spread across the Central Asian stands. And this is why Russia itself is on the lookout to support security measures in the Central Asian states, largely because not only does it protect Russia, but because it also means that the Central Asian states will have to depend to a degree on Russia once again for security support. And this is one of the reasons I was talking to the two national security bodies here in Tashkent.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. He's in Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan. However, there are too many villains, there are too little time. When we come back, we're headed to Sudan, a coup. And what does it mean for the whole region, especially Ethiopia and the Nile River Valley and Egypt and the relations between North Africa and Europe? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.